The Pre-Paces podcast is brought to you by two brilliant sponsors. Paces Ahead is a fantastic four-day face-to-face Paces course run in Brentford, London. They bring you a whole host of patients with fascinating stories and reliable signs, and these patients are absolutely delighted to allow you to hone your exam skills prior to exam day. Some of the patients actually are used in the exams themselves, and the next courses are running from the 20th to the 23rd of May, and then I will be helping out on the course running on the 28th to the 31st of May. Please do come and say hello. I'd love to have a chat and hopefully help you on your way to passing your paces. But if you can't make the course for whatever reason, our other sponsor, Pass Test, has got you covered with their market-leading online revision resource. There are tons of videos which help you revise from the comfort of your own home, and most listeners that I've spoken to have said this is equally essential for your paces success. But that's enough for me for now. Let's get into this week's episode of the Pre-Paces podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Pre-Paces podcast. My name's Dr. Jenny Goff, and this week we're doing something a little bit different. I've got Sam Williams, who is your usual host, here with me, and we're actually going to interview Sam today. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Jen. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
No problem at all. Thank you for letting me take over your podcast.
We were saying before the record, Jen, I feel like I've handed you my baby.
Yes, I feel very honoured, trusted with this task. It's very kind of you. So yes, I've done a few of the podcasts before with you historically and I've always really enjoyed it. So it's a pleasure to be back today. So I think we thought we would interview you today, given that you interview lots of doctors and things as part of your normal podcast setup. We thought we'd turn the tables and ask you lots of questions. So I've got a few questions to ask you, and I thought I'd split it into sort of more podcast themed ones, and then there are some not too personal, but some sort of personal questions about your life, etc., so we can get to know you a little bit better and the listeners can get to know their podcast host a little bit better, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sounds good, Jen. And we should probably give this full disclosure to the listeners that I've glanced at some of these questions but not all of them.
Yes,
so you gave me a taste, a flavor of what you were gonna ask, but not all of them.
And we should also say that you are on your night shifts at the moment.
Yeah, I'm post nights right now.
Post nights. It's 11:25 and just come back from your night shift and very bravely have volunteered to do an interview on behalf of your podcast.
This is the commitment that I have.
Exactly.
To producing content.
Very commendable. Great. So maybe we'll just start by, I don't know how much your listeners actually know. Can you give us a rundown of your training, or what year of training you are, where you work, what your specialty is, what your interests are?
Yep. So regular listeners will know that I'm a cardiology registrar in the 7th Deanery, and I have just started my ST5 year now. So I was one of the last ST3 specialty registrar. So I'm in my third year of registrar training, and I've moved around a lot since I started my ST3. I was in Cornwall for a year, but now I'm back in the 7th Deanery, and I just think cardiology is the best specialty, and that might come across in the slightly biased opinions that some of the listeners hear in the podcast, but I think it's one of the best things I've ever done to go into cardiology training. So I'm really, really happy. And Jen, we should also say that you are now in the cardiology club as well. You have now taken up a cardiology training post too. So I think all the listeners should give you a big round of applause for that as well.
Thank you. That's very kind. Yes, I have. I've just started in Wessex. So I'm an ST4, but I'm the new system of the IMT3 ST4. So I'm very baby junior at the moment, but it's, I would agree with you in your summation that it's the best specialty. Two very biased presenters, unfortunately, today. And do you have a specialist or something you want to specialise in? Have you thought about that yet?
So I've got an interest in devices, imaging and inherited cardiology. And if you want to go even more specific, then sports cardiology is the area that I'm interested in. But anything devices or imaging, I'm very happy to talk at length about.
Fine. And then you haven't specifically, because obviously those are two individual specialties, you haven't decided yet which of the two is your one.
No, not yet. It'll be, yeah, subspecialty choices are next year. But I think ST5 is usually the, or in old money, is the year that most people try and get a fellowship or research post somewhere. So I think that's probably what I'll be trying to aim for come August of 2024.
Oh, interesting. So a year out of training to do a little bit of something different, something extra.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan before you enter the path to CCT, which is approaching much faster than I ever had anticipated.
Yes. I mean, ST5 already is, it's not to be sniffed at, Sam. That's 2 years have just flown by, haven't they?
It's terrifying.
So that's your kind of job role and what you're looking forward to doing in the next couple of years. I'm going to talk about the podcast a little bit now, unless there's anything else you want to talk about in terms of work-wise. But I thought we'd ask you, because to be honest, it's quite an interesting thing that you've done. You've set up your own podcast. You've done it all from scratch. You did it all yourself. And you've actually done it for how long now?
At the time of recording, it's been, I think, 2 years and 9 months.
And as that timeline shows, doing it through your training and through your application to being a cardiology registrar, etc., I feel like it's quite a trendy thing to do. And I wondered if you had any tips for anybody that might be thinking about setting up their own podcast.
Yeah, sure. So I think the first thing to say with any, and a few people have asked me that question, especially people who I've met at work. You know, people who've listened to the podcast or found it interesting have asked about how would they go about setting it up themselves, or what advice I'd give to someone who wanted to start podcasting. I think the first thing I'd say is that you have to enjoy whatever you're talking about. I know that sounds sort of obvious, but some people might expect to podcast with the idea of making money or the idea of, you know, doing something which isn't just doing it because you enjoy it. I think in a similar way to how you might choose your medical specialty, you have to enjoy it if you're going to pursue it and go through with it, because otherwise what's the point really? if you don't enjoy it, then what's the point? And I enjoy talking about medicine, and particularly PACES, although it's a you know, flawed exam, we know it is, it's still so interesting to, you know, talk through such a wide and varied range of topics with the guests that I managed to get on. I think, or the other bit of advice that I would give, is be prepared for a significant investment of your time in trying to produce it, because I don't know if you were going to ask about this later, Jen, but it is a significant time investment, and it's not something which you can just sort of, you know, magic up overnight. And I think some podcasts do that, but I think the production value in producing something which is well thought out and well planned, I think particularly because mine is educational, it's quite easy to think of, or, you know, it's quite easy to provide value because it's educational. I think it's much harder in, for example, like the entertainment sector, where there's just a super saturated market where you can struggle to find your niche. I think the only other bit of advice I would say is that consistency is everything, and trying to build an audience who are going to listen to your podcast is best done when the audience know when they're going to expect a new episode. And so hopefully regular listeners will know that the episodes go out every fortnight on a Sunday. I think if you're whether you're doing it weekly or fortnightly or monthly, it's important just to make that regular so that the listeners know when to expect a new episode. And I think that is really important, just to make sure that you're growing your audience, because then they'll keep coming back and hopefully continuing to listen.
Definitely. And I think if anyone who's ever done any teaching will attest to, is that actually when you start researching these topics, even topics that you think, oh, I know this inside out, back to front, upside down, when you actually start talking about it, you realise that you need to do a lot of research into it in order to talk about it proficiently to somebody else. So I think the amount of preparation that it takes to produce these episodes shouldn't be sniffed at all. Can you give us a rough idea? How far in advance do you record?
So that varies a lot. And the reason it varies is basically because, as you mentioned, I'm doing this basically whilst I'm working full time. I'm not working less than full time. I'm on a 100% rota, which, as you, as we know, includes these night shifts, which I've just come back from. And what it means is I have to record basically in mostly evenings and weekends, or either on 0 days like today, although it's not a 0 day, I'm between shifts. But it means that it's where some points in the rota where I've got more 0 days, or I've taken leave for other reasons, then I'm able to record more. And then that might mean that I have 4 or 5 episodes in the bank. So I've got maybe a couple of months worth of episodes. But sometimes, as has happened more recently, it's been more difficult to find guests. And also the guests that I have found have sometimes had to cancel at short notice for other reasons, or everyone's extremely busy in the current climate. They've all got their own commitments. So trying to find people willing to give up some time to come on the podcast is sometimes tricky. And in those situations, sometimes it's not that far in advance. And I think the closest I've ever got to not having an episode to put out, I recorded something on a Friday afternoon to go out on the Sunday evening. So it has sometimes been, you know, pretty tight to record an episode to put out.
Absolutely. And how long does it take you to edit the episodes?
So that is directly proportional to the length of the episode. What I figured out is that for each approximately each 15 to 20 minutes of content, it takes about an hour of editing to do that. But that also does depend on how flowing the conversation is and how much there is to cut out. And some guests have more, you know, fillers, and there's lots of ahs, or, you know, odd words that people have as sort of little ticks in their speech that fill speech gaps. And if there's more of those, then there's more to cut out. So if for example, there's an hour long recording, most of the time that'll take about 3 hours of editing.
Gosh, it's a long time. Yes. And I imagine when people's dogs bark when you're trying to record as well, that takes more time.
Yeah, but
to edit.
Makes great content for the Christmas bloopers episode. So I honestly don't mind.
Good. Fine. Brilliant. So how many episodes have you actually done?
Well,
do you know?
this episode will go out when I've recorded. Hold on. This episode will go out when I'll have recorded either 75 or 76 episodes. So that's the plan. But as we've alluded to, we're recording in advance of the date itself.
And is there a plan for a 100th episode, or am I being cheeky?
I don't know if there's going to be a special 100th episode. I think I'm just happy to continue producing them. I'll be amazed if I get to 100. I think that would be awesome. But I don't have any special plans as of yet. But, you know, never know. Watch this space. It might be something really special.
Do you have any up-and-coming podcasts that you're excited about, or any guests that you're getting on that you could tease us with for the future?
Honestly, not really, because it's true. There are some people who have wanted to get on the podcast for a long time that I'm desperately trying to get on after Christmas. But as I've said, sometimes really hard, especially with the type of people who are trying to get on that are consultants in the NHS who are busy enough anyway to get them to have a free slot in their calendar for an hour or longer is really tough. But I obviously try my best to get the highest quality guests on for our fantastic listeners. But it's very touch and go sometimes with getting guests on. But I'm hoping 2024 will bring some awesome guests for the listeners.
Just talking about guests, have you had anybody on the podcast that you felt was particularly interesting, or somebody that you really enjoyed interviewing? You don't have to necessarily name names, but anybody that any episode that you particularly enjoyed recording?
That's a great question, Jen. And This was one which you did give me in advance, so I have had some time to think about it. And I thought the diplomatic answer is to say, well, I love recording all of my episodes because all of my guests are fantastic. Yeah. And I honestly think, I love speaking to people who I've got on who are my friends, or either my friends like you are, Jen, or my former colleagues who I've worked with, because it's a great opportunity to catch up with people who I've worked with before. But a couple of them do stand out, and I chose these for a couple of different reasons. The first one, which I really enjoyed recording, was relatively early on, and it was the episode on hypertension with Dr. Angus Nightingale, who's a consultant cardiologist at the Bristol Heart Institute. And I'd worked with Angus before, but this was the first episode where essentially I basically didn't have to do any editing whatsoever, because he was just, the way he was speaking on this topic was so fluent. And it was probably the first time that I listened to an episode and I just thought the way that he's speaking was just so fluent, and I didn't have to edit anything. It was amazing. And the other episode which I really enjoyed recording was the MedReg episode on calling gastro out of hours with Dr. Ajay Verma. And the reason I love that episode is because it gave me the opportunity to ask all the seemingly stupid personal questions that I wanted answered for me with the management of acute gastro patients. And so it gave me an opportunity to ask that without feeling, self-conscious about asking a gastroenterologist that I actually had to work with. So it alleviated some of my management anxiety of managing acute gastro patients out of hours. So yeah, those were a couple that sort of stood out for me.
Yes, I love that. Brilliant. So, yeah, I don't want to know. I know the answer to this question, obviously. It's just my, the people listening to the podcast might want to know. No, that's great, because I guess as well, the podcast, making the podcast, is it beneficial for you in terms of your own revision and meeting new people and things like that? Have you found that actually it's helped your medical practice?
I definitely think it's benefited me. I think especially the episodes which really helped me are the ones where the other being a MedReg episodes, the ones where it's sort of maybe more clinically applicable. And obviously I did my paces longer ago than I'd care to remember, but the being a MedReg episodes even for me are really valuable. I was always, as I said, I was always really anxious about particularly managing upper GI bleeds, which is why that episode was so helpful for me. And the other one, which I absolutely loved, which has made me so much more confident, is the calling stroke episode. There were two episodes, because it covered both thrombolysis and thrombectomy. But I do not think I would have been as confident in managing those situations on call if I hadn't done that. So definitely it's benefited my practice in that way. In terms of networking, it has helped me connect with like-minded people who want to just educate this cohort of listeners and training doctors. And so there have been connections made, and I've been able to, for example, I was able to teach on the Paces Ahead course, which I wouldn't have been able to do if they didn't support the podcast, and that was a great experience. So yeah, just as an example, that was one way where I gained a valuable experience from the podcast, which I wouldn't have got otherwise.
I've recently moved to Poole in near Bournemouth, and I was just thinking, actually, I'm driving back this evening because I live a little bit north of Bristol, but I was thinking, I'm going to download some of these podcasts, have another listen to them, because they are really good. But I was going to try and find that gastro one, because I think that sounds brilliant.
Yeah, the gastro one really was one of my favourites. And that, I think, was one of the quite early ones, of the being a MedReg. But that also was the first one where I thought, right, I really need to... I need to pack in every single question to alleviate my own anxieties of managing gastro patients. Episode 47. There you go.
And I've also noticed that you've got one of my heroes of the podcast world, Dr. Amy Burbridge, on your podcast, because she does. Sorry, you don't have to necessarily include this in your podcast, but she does a really good podcast as well.
Yeah, I love the Home of Medicine. I think that's absolutely great. I think, yeah, and I've got no qualms with plugging Home of Medicine. I think that's an amazing podcast. In fact, I actually, maybe going back to one of your earlier questions, I did email Amy recently asking if she wanted to come back on. So hopefully she'll manage to find some time to come back on and discuss something else to do with PACES or just something clinical.
I mean, she must be a busy lady now with everything. Fine. And the only other thing I want, well, there are a few other things I wanted to ask, but one other thing I was really wanted to know is, do you get recognised? Do people recognise your voice when you're working and say, oh, you're the chap from the Pre-PACES podcast?
So I have done a couple of times, but I wouldn't say it's very regular, but definitely when I have moved workplaces before, people have approached me and said that they've either listened to the podcast or helped them revise. Yeah, when I moved to my most recent trust, I was at handover, and the new ST4 reg who was handing over to me has said, when we introduced ourselves to each other, he was like, hey, you're the guy from the podcast. And I was sort of like, yeah. And he said, love your work, thanks for doing it. And that was really sweet. And actually, another guest that we had on the show, who was Manny Amaya, who came on the show to talk about the IMT, the new IMT application process, which I can't remember when that was, but that was a while back. I think that was last year, October of 2022. When Manny met me for the first time, she said she didn't want to talk to me for a short period of time when we first met because she didn't want to mention the podcast. But then, you know, she did in the end. But that was so sweet of her to you know, be self-conscious about talking to me. But you know, it's I don't buy, and I'm always happy to talk about the podcast, but I hope that I'm not one of those people that, you know, mentions it at the drop of a hat. I don't tend to sort of talk about it too much at work, I hope.
I have to say, sometimes people ask me about it as well. Usually not random.
No way.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Usually just people I've worked with for a bit, and then they go, oh, actually, I listened to that podcast and you were on it. Like, oh. It's quite nice. It does make you feel good inside, doesn't it? What's the long-term vision, Sam? Have you got plans for the future? Are you going to branch out?
Jen, it's a constant thorn in my side thinking about. I shouldn't say it's a thorn in my side. It's something which I'm always thinking about with the podcast, is where are we going with this, and how much longer can we keep it going? Listen, I think this podcast in particular has still got legs in it. I think there's plenty of topics which we haven't explored that need covering, and I think the listeners deserve for this podcast, you know, when it eventually ends, I think there shouldn't be a stone unturned in terms of things which might come up in PACES, which the listeners can benefit from. So I think there's plenty of legs in it yet. One thing which I think is going to have to, that I'm going to have to think about, is just making best use of my time, especially because now I have a much longer commute than I did last year. Last year, I only had a 10-15 minute cycle of a commute, and now I'm driving for an hour every day. So making the most of sort of free time like I am now by recording this with you is going to be really important, and just being organized with my time to keep producing episodes. So yeah, I think there's plenty more left in the tank, and it's just a case of making sure I'm organized to continue to provide the listeners with high quality educational content.
I have faith in you. You are one of the most focused, you know, hyper-vigilant, focused people I've met. So I think if anyone can do it, it's you.
That's kind, Jen. Thanks.
So I was going to switch to talking a little bit about you as a human.
As a human?
As a human, yes, indeed. So although you are a fabulous doctor and a cardiologist, there is more to you than that. Because I know you do a little section at the end, don't you, where you ask the guests some surprising non-medical things about them.
Yeah, the quiz the consultant.
That's it. So I thought I'd do a similar-ish sort of thing.
Oh, God. See, listeners, this is the bit which she hasn't told me about.
It's nothing too bad. I'm not going to ask you what your favourite colour is. It's okay. Sorry. So I guess I was just going to ask you, first of all, what's your favourite hobby or extracurricular activity that you enjoy the most outside of medicine?
So I have a couple of hobbies outside of medicine which keep me sane. The first is The first is that I am a football referee, which I think I mentioned in maybe one episode. And so I do that regularly at the weekends where I referee all over the Southwest. And the other one, which I wish I did less of because it doesn't contribute much to me or my life, but I love playing online poker for very small amounts of money. And so that's probably something that I spend more time doing, and it takes up a disproportionate amount of time, which I probably could spend on producing podcast content. But yeah, that's one of the things which I wish I could do maybe slightly less of to produce more podcast content. But yeah, those are the main two, I think.
And you're not close to winning enough to quit cardiology and...
Nowhere near. Absolutely nowhere near. I wish.
Maybe soon. Do you play football as well as referee?
I used to play football, but unfortunately, when I was at university, I tore my cruciate ligament. And so that was the end of my playing career. But I thought I had to keep my hand in or foot in. And so refereeing is my connection to stay in touch with the footballing world.
Brilliant. And do you have I don't know whether to ask you this because you might cause some divide, but I was going to ask, do you have a football team that you support?
I do have a team, Jen, and it's where you're working. It's Bournemouth.
Really?
Yeah,
I should have. Oh, do you ever come to Bournemouth to do matches?
I not to do matches myself, but in the past I used to go to games really often until I moved too far away to travel on a Saturday. And obviously I've got my own matches on a Saturday as well, which make it slightly tricky. But yeah, in my youth and when I was at university, I used to travel regularly to go to Bournemouth and watch the Mighty Cherries.
Why Bournemouth?
Well, that's very near to my family home. So it's the closest local team that I had as a teenager growing up, and that's the nearest club to my to where my family home is.
So you don't I'm going to annoy people by saying this, but you didn't sell out and just support, you know, the team at the top of the Premier League.
No.
You don't live anywhere near.
Support your local team.
Good egg.
Support your local team. And when there's an international break, I encourage everyone, go to your local non-league football and support local football, because that's real football, in my opinion, for now. That's where the real football is and where the real heart of true football fans are, is that local football.
Because we did a football-themed project sort of thing at one point. And I remember, because I was having to Google all these leagues, I don't understand football, as Sam quickly realised. I had to Google all these different leagues and I didn't understand any of it. And my phone took this to mean that I was suddenly very interested in football. So for about a few months, I just kept getting all these like match scores on my phone, like this team, this. And I don't care.
All these suggested ads, exactly, from your phone listening to you.
But it's realised now that, you know, that's not for me. Do you play any sport yourself? Or
I keep fit for refereeing by running, and I do, and I like to run. If at any point in time I have a gym membership, which is not at the moment because I am doing more running now, I'll occasionally do some a regular workout regime, which I have an Excel spreadsheet too with all my PBs. That's going to paint me as some sort of exercise nerd poring over my Excel spreadsheet, looking at my PBs for very specific workouts. But it's what works for me, so that's what I'm going to keep doing.
And are you going on holiday anywhere exciting soon? Any travel plans?
I do have family in South Africa, and it's my girlfriend has always wanted to go on a safari. So that's in the pipeline at some point. Yeah,
that's a once in a lifetime trip. That would be amazing. Has she been before?
No, she's never gone. She really wants to go though.
So I'll ask you. We've discussed that we're both budding cardiologists and can't possibly imagine doing anything else. But if you had to choose another specialty, which medical specialty would you do and why?
That's a great question, Jen. I think, and this is not close by any stretch, that there's only one other specialty that I was ever interested in as much as I was interested in cardiology. And when I did this specialty, it turned my head in a serious way, in that I thought, oh, I might actually give up on the dream that I wanted to do, or, you know, I wanted to do cardiology since I was an F1. And that was when I did intensive care, even though it was half of my rotation was through COVID. So I did 4 months of non-COVID ITU, and then the first wave of COVID happens. And so I did 4 months of COVID ICU. So I got sort of both sides of it. And I just think it's very similar to cardiology in a lot of ways. It's quite procedural. You know, you've got opportunities to do lots of procedures and things. You're looking after very unwell patients, similar to how we do in cardiology. And there's you can be a bit cerebral about it. There's a lot of thinking, a lot of close thought and attention to detail with a lot of the very small details of patients in the ICU. And I really enjoyed my time working in intensive care when I was there. The only one thing which I think took me away from that is the patient contact. I didn't much like speaking to patients who are so unwell to the point where they couldn't talk and you couldn't interact with them, or they were sedated and ventilated. Whilst obviously I was happy to talk to relatives and families, it's not quite the same when the patient isn't involved in those discussions at all. And going back to cardiology, I really appreciated the fact that, you know, you get to discuss things directly with the patients, and contact with the patients is something which I didn't get from intensive care. But I definitely think that if I didn't do cardiology, it would be intensive care for me.
That's a very good answer. I agree with a lot of the things you said. I did also really enjoy my intensive care placement, but I felt a bit, I did 3 months and I felt I barely scratched the surface, to be honest. Of all the things you could learn.
I think that's a very common experience, because 3 months is barely enough time to get a grip on managing ICU patients. And I felt really lucky, obviously not lucky because COVID happened, but lucky I got to stay in the environment and get a longer experience. And by the end of my time there, I was very comfortable managing it, you know, the standard intensive care admission, probably not comfortable managing the more complex ones, but the common admissions to ICU, I was very happy with a lot of the procedures, very happy with the type of patient and the expected trajectory of a patient through the unit. I don't know if that's something you can get in 3 months. I think you have to be there longer and see more and experience more. And anyone who thinks that a career in intensive care might be for them, but hasn't got the experience, a lot of units are very happy to, you know, have you for taster weeks or organize something like that for you. And I can't recommend it enough. I think it's a great specialty.
Can you do joint cardiology ICM now or not? Is it just renal?
Well,
acute med?
I think I remember seeing something somewhere that from a certain point in time, I don't know even if it's this year, but you could choose to accredit in ICM with any group one medical wow. specialty.
I mean, it must be very difficult to do all your cardiology training and your ITU training.
Well, I think you just do a longer, you just have to extend your training if you wanted to triple a credit in gen med, intensive care, yeah. and cardiology. You'd have to do an extra year, maybe two of training, because it's not just that, you know, it's learning about, you know, airway management, which we don't do any of in cardiology. You know, you'd have to learn to intubate and be a safe pair of hands from that perspective. Other, you know, really advanced procedures like tracheostomies, you know, learning to do that is a completely different type of procedure than angiograms or pacemakers. It's totally different. But I'll have to look that up again about when that might happen, because I don't know. I just remember seeing that at one point, that from a certain year, you would be able to triple a credit. Or with any group one specialty.
And then I'm going to flip the coin over and say, if there was a medical specialty that you'd least like to be involved in, which one would it be and why?
You can't ask me that. Mean.
You don't have to be mean about the specialty. You can just that your own personal attributes maybe don't suit it as much as cardiology.
I mean, I'm going to upset someone by answering this question. I don't know if I truly can answer this question without offending someone. But all I can say is that in terms of my skill set and things which I find myself much less good at, one of the things I find I'm much less good at is or maybe it's just things like I wouldn't like to do. So I think either something like palliative care, I know it's a really brilliant specialty and they do fantastic things. I think in terms of my skill set, I'm just not suited to that. And I would just feel sad all day, every day. And there is a huge sense of pride that I'm sure many palliative care doctors get from helping people die well and die in the way that they want to. I think I'm too emotional and I think I'd get sad. I don't know if I have I think with cardiology, you can have I think I have a sense of sort of emotional distance from my patients in a way. I think in pal care, I just get too invested and I'd end up crying all day, every day.
You're right. I think you do have to distance yourself a little bit, don't you? Otherwise it does take a toll on you. I don't think that's an offensive thing to say. I think that's very reasonable. There are lots of things I'd be useless at.
Go on.
I honestly think being a GP is so difficult, because the idea of seeing a patient in 10 minutes that could be absolutely anything at all is terrifying. And I don't understand how they do it. And I think they must just work so hard. And to make a patient feel satisfied within 10 minutes is nigh on impossible. So I think to be a GP in this day and age is to me far more terrifying than being a medical reg.
I actually agree with that. And what's really funny about that is that I bet there must be people listening who know GP trainees who are friends with them, or maybe even in a relationship with or married to a GP. And I bet some of the GPs would say the exact same thing the other way around. They would say, I couldn't bear to do a med reg shift, but I'm very happy taking my, you know, morning surgery and doing my 10 minute appointments. But I absolutely agree with you, Jen. I think being a GP, especially with the climate as it is at the moment, is absolutely, absolutely mind boggling. So all due respect to any GPs or GP trainees listening, because I think it's a remarkable thing and a remarkable service they provide to communities. I just couldn't do it myself. Absolutely.
Agree. I think they're brilliant. And I always think they're really nice to you on the phone. I always get a lot of them to sort of apologize for ringing me, and I think it's fine. You don't have to apologize.
Well, Jen,
you're probably busier than I am.
Well, Jen, you know, I actually have thought about doing an episode on managing GP referrals as like one of the being a med reg episodes, and I think that would be of some value. But I think the thing which I get from my GP conversations is I don't think I've ever, or at least I can count on one hand for sure, the number of conversations that I've had over the phone with the GP who's rung me as the med reg on call that I've come away and thought, oh, you know, what a waste of time, or that, you know, they could have managed that themselves. And the really annoying thing is they're always real head scratchers as well. I never find myself, they're always really hard questions, because by definition, you're talking to someone who's an experienced clinician, and they're a consultant in their own specialty. And so I always find those conversations, number one, very rewarding, because the GPs are often very, very grateful for the advice. But I also sometimes find it very difficult because you're talking to someone experienced who's in a pickle, and you know they've often done all the sensible things first, and sometimes you can't add very much because they've already done most of it.
Okay, Sam, so that's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. So don't forget to like and subscribe, or leave a 5-star review to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We always love to hear from our listeners, so give us a shout out on our Twitter at Prepaces Podcast or our website. If you really want to go above and beyond and support the show, you can at buymeacoffee.com/prepacespodcast. But for now, we're just about out of time. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Sam for letting me take over his podcast. And we'll see you next time on the Prepaces Podcast.